Paul Tonko, I know one of the big issues are oil trains, oil bombs, as they put it. They park themselves downtown. They're an accident waiting to happen, and they will happen. How do we stop it?
Well, you know, there have been a lot of concerns expressed to both state and federal governments. We have looked at our neighbors to the north, Canada, that has been impacted by the same transport of crude oil. The Department of Transportation, the United States DOT, and certainly the Secretary Fox of that agency, have been working on rules and regs that are stricter. They've been out there for public comment period, and now they've just unveiled some of their recommendations. There are some good measures in there. They look at the displacement of the 111s, the current transport car for crude oil, looking at improved engineering and better safety measurements of these vehicles. So that's helpful. They're in the midst of creating some other requirements for the response teams. Public notification, safer transport of rail is important. But there is a concern that I have for some of the recently promulgated rules, including the speed by which they can travel in what are called urban corridors. But those urban corridors affect populations of 100,000 or more. Mm. And so it would not really have a presence felt in the 20th Congressional District that I represent.
Which is over.
And, right. And so, you know, and the rail goes from the far west in Montgomery County all the way through into Schenectady County, over into the Albany port.
But you and I both know, Paul Tonko, that there is going to be an accident.
Well, you know, there have been these derailments and accidents, you're right, and it's
just
troublesome.
Just a matter of time.
Right.
And that this oil is sort of really dangerous oil. I mean, this is not the kind of oil which will not catch on fire. This will.
Right. And the immediate response or the immediate fix, I believe, is to come up with much stricter, safer regs that guide that shipment. You know, the reliance on fossil-based fuels, on crude oil for our energy needs requires either rail line or pipeline.
Are we making progress on the solar? I mean, you've been here. You are an advanced leader. You did it all. You're 25 years in the assembly. We're known as Mr. Environment. You talked about the need to go to other than, fossil-based fuel. Are you heartened at all because, you know, I get a call every night saying, do I want to put solar on top of my house?
Right. You know, Jimmy Carter, President Carter, back in the 70s, late 70s, warned us, encouraged us, challenged us to move into a greening up exercise. We ignored that, and shame on us. You know, we were challenged. We could have been much more energy independent. You know, the wars that we've had in the Mideast, I am certain that a lot of that was about oil. And so to your question, are we getting anywhere? Well, my first term in 2009, when I arrived in Washington, we did the stimulus package, you'll recall, and it was the largest single investment in energy transformation policy in the history of Congress. And then it just fell short after that. The next couple of sessions of Congress was this attack on any sort of innovation. The proposal, the budget that was recently passed in during April in the
Republican
House. The
Republican
budget in the House of Representatives that will be conferenced with the Senate is an attack on energy efficiency, renewable energy. It's an attack on ARPA-E, which is a research arm within DOE.
And what's the attack? I mean, how does
the attack is they dumb down the commitment to research, to energy efficiency and renewable energy as a branch of the Department of Energy. They take ARPA-E, which is a model imposed after the success of DARPA, which was the Defense Department's advanced research project money, ARPA money. What we've been doing with the ARPA funds is a strong stewardship on research, prototype development, product lines that take us into innovation, where we displace traditional ways of creating energy, become much more efficient in energy generation that's domestic driven, and also underscores opportunities for innovation in efficiency. All of this is slowed down when we have this thinking in the House that says, look, you're going to take this progress. when I arrived in Washington, they had already approved the ARPA-E and America Competes legislation in 07, but they never funded it. And then when I was at the table of science, space, and tech in my first term in 09 and 10,
that's the committee.
We funded it.
Yeah.
We gave it the appropriation, and it finally got legs. So now it's not just a concept that they're dumbing down, but a concept with a track record of sound history of good project money that now is creating the innovation we need. I don't understand this Congress.
So if you had a Democratic Congress, would that change?
Oh, absolutely. I think you would see a better reflection of what ARPA and energy efficiency was about in 09 and 10.
Now, we only have about 3 minutes here, but
sure.
I did want to talk to you, Paul Tonko, about your work with one of my other favorites, Representative Richie Neal.
Oh, Richie's a great colleague.
Right, on the I-90 STEM corridor.
Right.
And since I'm a practitioner of the I-90 STEM corridor, living in Great Barrington and coming over on the I-90 every day, I wondered what that was all about.
Well, it's about taking our strengths on innovation and having common dialogue. And so Richie had a forum in Western Massachusetts in his district, invited me out because he knows of our interest and the developments in this region, which is dubbed by the Department of Energy to be one of the five hottest areas of clean energy, innovation, high-tech job growth. So merging our thinking, and it was great. Everybody's on the same page. When we start talking regionalizing the strengths, I think we get efficiencies of scale out there. We get economic outcomes that are very strong. And we're able to take this focus on high tech and make it happen. And when I spoke to the group, he had me do like a somewhat of a quasi keynote to kick us off. And in my comments, I talked about the space race, the global race on space in the 60s, and how we committed as a nation in the aftermath of a Sputnik moment. We were driven with passion, passionate resolve to invest, and we were that nation to first stake the flag, our flag, on the surface of the moon. We need that same passion and commitment to research, to the human, physical, and capital infrastructure required to be robustly competitive, because now there's a global race on clean energy and innovation, and whoever wins that global race will be the international kingpin. It's not a two-way race as it was in the 60s, U.S. versus USSR. Now it's dozens of nations bulking up to be the winner. Now's not the time to go backward, as we have with this budget in the House of Representatives that does not commit to innovation, does not commit to invention, to the pioneer spirit. That's our DNA. And so the I-90 corridor, that is the pathway of pioneers. You know, I gave Richie credit to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You had those shipyards, those, you know, those pioneers that were building in the shipyards and all of the factories in along the Boston proper. But then it also came into the Erie Canal as we went west. So if we didn't spark that westward movement, we sure as heck put fuel onto the fire with the development of mill towns along the Erie Canal.
You're absolutely right. Historically, of course, we want to give credit to Knox for bringing those cannons over the over the same corridor. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here having our talk, I suspect.
Absolutely. But my point is our history, our past should speak to us.
Paul Tonko, always a great pleasure to have you here with us. And it's so important to us, and we thank you.
Hi, my pleasure, always.